Hi, it is Christine McDaniel here with the Co-Living Code again this week and really excited. So we have Austin Langlois on, and he actually just wrapped up. He was the Director of Marketing Communications over at Outpost Asia, which has 3 locations. And so this is going to be a unique episode, you guys, because we're definitely going to talk to him as somebody that not only has lived at co-living spaces for the last year and a half. So we're going to talk about that. Isn't the last 6 months, you know, working at Outpost Asia, running all of their digital marketing strategy, you know, online branding, like all these fun things. And it's funny, we came in contact last week. He actually was nice enough to be our guest speaker for Co-Living Hub, which is the International Association for Co-Living Homes. And I was taking notes like a crazy person because he just had amazing strategy. We're going to dive into a more tactical and strategy when it comes to marketing your co-living homes, whether it's on Instagram, digitally, just how to communicate that message, how to get the right people in the doors for you guys. So again, this will be kind of combo interview, right? To learn more about Austin, but also tactical. Again, we have lots of viewers that are either running their own homes currently or getting ready to. And I know marketing is like the number one thing on their mind at all times. So Austin, welcome to the Co-Living Code Show. So I'll let you take it away. Actually, let's back up a year and a half to when you started your voyage of co-living around the world and where you're from originally.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. I'm originally from Michigan and the United States. Moved to Miami to work at an agency, and I just really didn't like it. The cost of living in Miami is so high, and so I'm sure you know. I wasn't working at a job that I was really feeling empowered, and I was really like, "What do I do next?" And it was kind of like my dream is to travel, right? And so one day I just woke up and sold everything and booked a one-way ticket to Bali. And it was literally, it went that fast. It was like in a week and a half. I was like, this is what I'm doing. I'm starting my own business. I had worked in all facets of marketing, from brand management to online to social to PR. So I kind of was able to like take all of those things and offer them to a client to say, hey, I've done all the different parts of marketing. Let me pull it all together for you to help build a strategy and implement on it and bring your business to the next level. So that's what I've been doing for the last year and a half, traveling full time. Started in Asia, and I went to Europe and South America, and now I'm back in Asia again. So it's been a journey.
Nice. And then the 2 properties. So do you bounce back and forth, because they have a couple properties in Bali, right? And then the third property is over in
Cambodia.
Cambodia.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I pop between the Canggu outpost and the Ubud one here. It's on the highlands, and one's more by the beach. So it kind of gives you the best of both worlds of Bali. And then we have one in Cambodia as well. So it's, you know, it's a lot of rooms to manage. It's a lot of co-working desks to manage, and it's, 3 spaces in 2 different countries. So again, that brings its own, marketing challenge, right? With different cultures, different like, marketing funnels, because, you know, Cambodia's audience is totally different than the audience that comes through Bali, which is very different than the audience, you know, that I was, you know, part of in Europe. So, I mean, it is totally, it's kind of learning as you go.
I love it. And then how many, beds total between the 3 properties roughly?
We have around 50 here in between Bali and Cambodia. So, I mean, it is quite a lot of rooms to manage, especially during high season, because the high season in Bali actually is different than the high season in tourism. It's the opposite, because people who travel for holidays are not the people who travel for work. So, I mean, you kind of are able, you have to balance both like the holiday people and the working people and with all the rooms. So it's a fun challenge.
And then the co-working spot. So you guys open up to outside people to come co-work. They don't necessarily need stay there. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So co-living, you get co-working included in the co-living package. If you wanted to come just be, you know, at our co-working spaces, you can do that as well. And people have a variety of different options to choose from, you know, a couple hours a week. So we have like a 25-hour package to unlimited package, where actually it's called our One Pass, and you can travel between all 3 locations on the same membership. So it's kind of like a cool network. And as Outpost continues to expand across the region, that will become even more valuable, right? Because you could, you know, potentially go between all, you know, 10 locations with the same membership, which would be really cool.
That is awesome. No, and I love it because you said you eat, sleep, breathe, co-living like I do, yes. Which is great. And so let's dive into the, let's go Instagram first, because that was just something okay. You really dove into on the call last week. And I appreciated that, you know, about the use of influencers and just, you know, your strategy behind that, you know, for any, and not even co-living homes, but just business in general, just how you appeal to the correct market and how do you get exposure through Instagram?
Yeah. So I think Instagram is a really tricky beast because you have a lot of people who are just posting really beautiful photos. You get really good engagement and get really good impressions, but it doesn't actually translate to heads and beds, right? Or it doesn't actually translate to sales. So you do have to kind of balance your Instagram strategy. I think a lot of people who just start up, they like to just show, you know, beautiful photos of their destination. And while that can be great, it doesn't actually inform people about what you are or what you offer. And those are the things that people who travel and work remotely are really looking for. They are really looking to know that you do have a private pool, that there is laundry services, there's a community kitchen, that the rooms are clean 3 times a week, you know, their linens are changed once a week, they get new towels every day. Like those types of things, they seem so nuts and bolts and so mundane compared to, like, you know, taking a trip to Nusa Penida and snorkeling with the manta rays. But I mean, that's what actually will move the needle on the business side, right? Is people saying, hey, I'm looking between your space and Airbnb or your space and a hotel. And this is what I'm going to receive that matches what I'm looking for. In addition to the community aspect, which we all know is so important and which is really why people choose co-living, right? Is to be able to be surrounded by other people who are curious and want to explore the world and are open-minded, you know, all these values that we all share. But you still have to hit the nuts and bolts of the actual like place where they're going to live, because again, it is really important. So it's really balancing that between the idyllic lifestyle or the community style aspect and then the actual nuts and bolts. So that could look like actually posting photos of your rooms. There's so many places that I've looked at online that don't actually post photos of their rooms, which I feel like is such a miss, because if I'm going to move into a co-living space, one of my big things is I want a queen bed. Like I've slept in too many single beds in my life, and I'm like, I don't need a single bed anymore. I want a queen bed. So if I can't see that there's a queen bed, then I'm probably not going to choose it, right? On the flip side, there's some co-living space, or in addition, there's some co-living space I've been to that didn't have any windows in the room, or they had like one tiny window and I didn't know it because there wasn't photos. So, you know, it is really important to show photos, because even if the co-living space isn't, you know, the Four Seasons, and maybe there is just a small window, it still helps people get an expectation of what they're going to receive. Because the biggest challenge that I've seen in the co-living space is the difference between expectation and reality. When someone has a really, really high expectation and they come to your space and, you know, there is a small window and there's a single bed and they were expecting a beautiful panoramic view with that you photograph from your terrace, which is great, but it's not from their room, and a single bed that's maybe a cot on the floor, that's a big difference, right? And they're going to be really unhappy. So the more photos, the more videos you can take, you know, video walkthroughs, video testimonials of people who can actually say, hey, I love this co-living space because, you know, we had, you know, co-living dinner every Thursday, and it was a great time for me to meet my fellow co-livers. You know, those types of things, which are a little bit more nuts and bolts, can really move the needle rather than just idyllic, you know, lifestyle content. The other thing that is really interesting to look at is the influencer side that you had mentioned, because a lot of people are trying to grapple with who is an influencer, how do I use them to boost my brand exposure, there's also a rising trend of what's called micro influencers, which are people who are probably between like 3 to 10,000, so they're pretty small in the influencer in the Instagram influencer world, but they often have like higher engagement or more real followers, if you could say, because they're actually, you know, they've probably met a lot of people who do a lot of the same things that they do. So they can actually be, you know, as influential, if not more influential than people who have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. And it really is trial and error. It will take just going out there and reaching out to influencers and saying, hey, we'd love to host you for a free stay. Or, hey, we saw that you're on your way to Bali. We'd love to have you stay at our co-living space, you know, in exchange for X, Y, and Z. The other thing you can also ask is you can reach out and say, hey, do you do brand partnerships? Would love to get your rate sheet. because depending on the influencer, they may or may not be out of your budget. And at least it gives you kind of a starting place to negotiate, especially if you don't have a lot of capital upfront. You can always say, hey, we saw that your rate sheet, you do, you know, your first package is 5 photos for $5,000. I don't have $5,000. Would you be willing to do one photo for, you know, $500 and I'll throw in, you know, a couple weeks of co-living stay. The other option you can do is partner with them to give away space. So whether it's your co-living or co-working space, in exchange for content. So you could say, hey, you know, I don't have a photography budget, but I'm going to reach out to a bunch of influencers to see if they could stay at my space, take photos while they're there. You know, they'll probably post on their social media. They'll probably post stories, you know, and you can even put that in the contract, stories or posts. But then you can also say, hey, I would love to get the high res photos. We'll tag you in the photos when we post them. You know, we'll put you in the credits on our website, but it's a good way to get kind of affordable content on a trade rather than having to hire a full-time photographer to go through and take all your photos. And that can be a big budget.
No, I love, love, love that because that's super tangible, right? So it's like they stayed there, they gave you something in return. Because we had talked even more in detail, and we'll go into this, is that two things with the influencers. And again, for Kindred Quarters, we haven't gone the influencer route at all yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm just leery because I know friends that have. And, you know, we talked about, you know, they have the pods. So a lot of them are in pods together and they're commenting on each other's stuff. And so, you know, you just have to make sure that they're your demographic, that not the influencer themselves, but all these people that are following them are your demographic that could afford to fly to Bali and stay there.
Right.
And a lot of times they're dreamers, they're not doers, right? And that's why they're constantly following and liking and commenting these influencers because they dream of being there, but they're not there. And so it's that disconnect, you know, is that, you know, how do we see through that? How do we see that they're really, you know, and it's not usually, I'm sure they don't, it's rare that it's like, oh, I came only because this influencer posted. They might have seen it for months and then finally made the jump and went on your website and booked a room, but you never knew it was the influencer. So it's a little hard to track, but you guys said you've had some luck, right?
We did, yeah. And the other thing you can do is always ask your influencer for the metrics. So, you know, after you do a campaign with them, you can say, hey, we'd love to see how many impressions it got, how many shares it got, how many bookmarks it got. That can be really key. A lot of people will like bookmark something on Instagram for later, right? I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, cool destinations or cool hotels or cool co-living spaces that I want to visit, and bookmark it. And so you can say, hey, 100 people bookmarked our co-living space photo. That says something, right? Because then they're probably saving it for later. So again, you can't necessarily tie it directly to sales unless someone says, I booked this because of an influencer I saw, right? But there are indications that can show you, hey, this did gain traction. Hey, this resonated with people. When you look through the comments, you can really gauge who is more of a bot or who is more of on the pod, because they're going to be a little bit more generic posts rather than people who are actually engaged or asking questions like, hey, I've never been there before. Where is that? Or, I didn't know that you were in Bali. You know, what are you doing there? Like those types of things that are a little bit more real are a good way to gauge, you know, who the audience is.
That's really cool. And then what's another great source that you think, you know, as far as getting people heads in beds, like you said?
So Facebook is also a tool that can be good. It is waning, right? Because of the algorithm is challenging. It's turning more into a pay to play. But if you create a really comprehensive strategy where everything, all your different social channels are all pointing to the same thing, it can be a powerful way to push a campaign forward. So here's an example. Let's say that you create a lead magnet. So a lead magnet is usually a download, something that someone would want to have. And you get their email address. So that's like the beginning of the marketing funnel. If you're a marketing professional, you probably have heard about the marketing funnel before. So let's say it's, you know, and let's say that your co-living space is in Uganda. So it's like the 10 things you have to know before you get to Uganda. So people download that, they get put on your email. And then, so you're able to email them on a regular basis. That's gold. Building your email list is so important. The other thing you can do is partner with other spaces or other friends or other businesses to run giveaways so for example, let's say that you're going to give away a couple rooms. You can partner with local businesses where people have to submit their email to enter the giveaway. Then you have their email, right? So that's one thing, is all the different tactics to get people's emails so you can email them directly, because they're, but then they're kind of a warmer lead. The other thing you can do though is still is do the exact same thing, but on social media. So you can say on Facebook, you can run promotions where people can insert their email for to get a download or to get a coupon code. So let's say you're running a Black Friday coupon code. People can put their email in, they'll get their coupon code. They can book your co-living for a reduced rate and you get their email. On Instagram, you can do a few similar things, like whether it's a giveaway. There is the little email button at the top as well of your profile. So it's a good place to direct people to say in your giveaway, rather than having them go to a web page. You know, it can be the click the link in bio and they can register right there on a landing page, or they can email you directly. So kind of using all of the different tools in your arsenal to really build your email list can be a really effective way to get people engaged, or at least on your list. And then you can start pushing out messaging there. And having all of those things work together, your website, your email marketing, your social media, all working together, can be a really powerful way to run promotions, to push key messaging about your space, news about your space, and even highlight promotions with other spaces as well. So, you know, let's say that you have partnerships with other businesses where people get discounts, you know, 15% off a haircut or 30% off a meal or something. It's another good way to continue to show the value of co-living, because I think a lot of people have a hard time distinguishing, should I go to co-living or should I go to Airbnb or should I go to a hotel or a hostel? And again, you can use all these channels to really push your value.
No, and I love that, because you had talked about that too, is that, you know, with what you guys offer, you know, especially somebody, you know, landing in Bali, like, how am I going to get from the airport to this place? And then don't you guys, you coordinate, it's like the comfort of you guys saying, hey, we can have somebody pick you up at the airport. We can have like the comforts of them being so plugged in, like out the gate, like, here's the best restaurants. Here's how you do laundry. Because I know laundry is kind of interesting over there.
So it is. Yeah. You know, and it is partly to saying, what would I want as a first time visitor to my city or my country? So for Bali, I was a first time visitor, and it was scary because you show up to this strange airport, you don't know where anything is, the traffic is crazy. You know, you're like, where do I get my laundry? There's like 20 laundry places on one street, and you're like, I don't know which one to go to. So what we've done at Outpost is really make it easy. I mean, you. With your co-living, you can get airport pickup. So someone will be there at the gate, like waiting for you to arrive. They'll drive you to the space, we'll check you in. You'll get a welcome kit. You'll get a welcome guide, which is an overview of not only Ubud or Canggu or Cambodia, the location you're in, but also all the amenities. So if you miss anything on the website, it's all there. You know, let's say, you know, we have breakfast included. We include like what time the breakfast is, like who the cook is, and, you know, all the things that you would ever need so that you don't feel like there's a strange person in your villa. Then on top of that, we give, you know, our recommendations for restaurants, for, you know, tips on how to rent a scooter, tips on where to go for laundry, you know, best date night locations. And then in that welcome guide, we also push our own key messaging around, you know, our training programs, our co-living or co-working, so that people continue to just hear more. That every single touch point that you have with a customer, if you can continue to push your key messages, it can be so important. Between someone being informed to be able to talk on your behalf, to say, hey, I heard that you're coming to Bali. Have you heard about Outpost Co-Living? Because in the remote work community, in the remote travel community, word of mouth is so powerful. And I'm sure you know, like, just having a presence on a lot of like the digital nomad Facebook groups can be so key. Because every day someone's posting, hey, I'm going to Bali, you know, any recommendations on where I should work or where I should live? If you're not in those conversations, you're really missing out on a really important touch point with your potential customers.
No, I love, love, love that. And you're exactly right. You know, I think, you know, when I went to Bali in April, you know, I think I spent way too much coming out of the airport on a ride. I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. So it would have been nice to have that comfort, you know, of like, okay, everything's handled, just the word of mouth. And do you guys have a nightly, do you have a minimum on stay? Is it 30 or two nights or how long?
No, you can book from a day to a couple months. So, I mean, we really run the gamut. Obviously, the longer you stay, the more of a package deal you're able to receive. So it works, you know, unlike a hotel where if you stay every night, you stay the same amount, you get, it's the same price. With us, the price does decrease per night the longer that you stay. And we've had people stay, you know, for 3, 4, 5 months. Because again, it is, you're paying for the convenience factor, the security, and just like the everything works. Because especially when you're in a an island destination, not everything works, right? For example, the other day, Bali had a power outage, and we have like backup generators here at Outpost. So like we didn't lose power, but like where I'm living in my villa, I lost power for like 2 hours, right? So we do take care to really emphasize a lot of those things that you wouldn't receive if you were just like staying at some homestay.
God. Oh yeah. The homestays. There's a lot of homestays out there. I remember those.
Yes.
Okay. So what's great too, why I'm so excited about this interview, and hopefully I'm sure the listeners are getting tons out of it, is that, you know, you're expert in, you know, PR and digital marketing and strategy across the board. Right. And you have this co-living background, right, on top of it. Right. A lot of times, you know, we, with the co-living operators, they might not have such a strong background in marketing. So I know you're ending your contract with them, but you do freelance marketing strategy, PR. Are you taking any new clients going forward, or do you already have that lined up?
Yeah. I'm always taking new clients. And I think the co-living space is a huge, like it's a big booming, growing community and industry. So I'm really excited to see all the things that people are doing. And I think there's a lot that we can all learn from each other as well, right? Because I feel like we're all kind of trying to figure it out as we go. And like I said before, you know, co-living varies from country to country. So it is helpful, I think, to have people who have lived in co-living spaces around the world to be able to say, hey, like, these are the things that I look for in co-living, or here are some gaps that I've seen in other co-living spaces that I think you could really work with. And I'd be happy to have that conversation.
No, that's amazing. And let's dive a little bit into that quickly, because most our interviews thus far have been London-based, very few in Asia. So what were the biggest differences, in your opinion, between the two markets?
So Europe is very much European-based people. So within the co-living or co-working environment, I met a lot of people in Europe that were from Europe. So when I was in Prague, I met a lot of people who were from Berlin, who were from Barcelona, who were from London, you know, who were from Oslo. I didn't meet a lot of Americans. I didn't meet a lot of Asians or people from Asia. I didn't meet a lot of people from South America. So it seemed a lot more regionalized. When you come to Asia, it's different because you have people from all over, and it's really split. You have like Australians. You have a good percentage of Australians, Americans. A few from Asia, but then you also have a few from Europe. So you kind of have a mix, whereas in Europe, I felt like it's a lot more regionalized. The other part is, in Europe, it was, at least in my experience, I found a lot of people were either on, you know, kind of a workcation. So like their work had said, okay, you can go work remotely from Germany. It's on the same time zone as us, so it's an easy thing to do. You know, there's not going to be a break in your productivity. You're going to work regular hours. In Europe, most people are freelancers or contractors. In Asia. So whether you're in Chiang Mai or Phuket or Bali or, you know, the kind of the digital nomad hotspots of the region, most people are entrepreneurs or solopreneurs. And there is a different energy level. So there are people who are really hustling, who are, you know, building their marketing funnels, who are like building their online course, who are building their affiliate marketing programs. So it is a little bit more, I would say, entrepreneurial. Whereas in Europe, I felt like it was a little bit more established professionals who were, you know, just traveling, you know, for a little while. The other thing is, you also have a seasonality swing in Europe and also in Asia. So Europe was very busy during the summer and spring and fall, but in the winter, because it's cold, you know, a lot of people leave Europe to go to South America or to go to Southeast Asia. On the flip side, Southeast Asia has the rainy season. So, you know, sometimes people don't necessarily go to Southeast Asia during the rainy season. Or in Thailand, they have burning season, smoky season. So it's a time when a lot of people leave Chiang Mai. So there is, if you pay attention to the cyclical nature of people's travel schedules, especially those that work and travel remotely full time, you will notice these patterns. In Europe especially, it is definitely more of like a warmer months location that I found. The only one that was different was the Canary Islands, because they have like the best weather all year round.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I haven't been there yet, but I'm going to be there in April. So I'm excited for the first time. Yeah, that's where our annual conference for co-living. Yeah, you should try to get there. We're having our annual conference at the end of April there for co-living homes. And so in the state, have you, I know you're from the States, but have you ever co-lived in anywhere, any major cities in the States?
Yes, yeah, so I've been to Rome.
Miami? Miami one?
Miami, yeah. So that's the only one I've done in the States, partly because I also haven't been in the States very much. This year I was in the States for like 15 days. So I haven't done a lot of like traveling within the United States and working remotely through co-living. But I'm seeing, and I think your space is proof that it is a growing market as well, right?
For sure. Yeah, definitely. And it is more, cause you know, I think that's another difference is like in the States, it seems to be more long-term based, right? So it's like a month minimum, most of them. But usually it's a month, or even some of these co-living concepts are having them sign a year lease, which I think is like defeats the purpose. Like most people want flexibility. Wow. I know, it's just crazy. But those are some of the bigger, more commercial ones. Like for us, I mean, we were doing 3 month minimum, but now we're just doing monthly minimum because it goes fast. But in Europe, you know, it's kind of almost still, you know, nightly, weekly, you know, shorter terms, more turnover. Those are some things that I've noticed with the different models, but not to say one's better than the other. I mean, it's more work, right, when you have more turnover. And then less community, right? So like our housemates really get to know each other because they'll live there for months and years, you know? At least a year and a half, most of them, some 2.5 years. They just stay, even though it's once a month, they stay forever. They just want that freedom, right? Of if they could leave, they'll leave, but otherwise they want to stay. So that's good, but perfect. Well, my final question, which I ask everybody is, Austin, where do you see co-living as an industry, like in the future, where do you see this going?
I see co-living as really the future of like urban city living. And even not even in urban cities, but also in destination living as well. When you go to find a place to stay, I feel like a lot of places cover the basics, right? There's a bed, there's the private bathroom, there's the hot water, there's the Wi-Fi, you know, breakfast may or may not be included. But what you are always missing is you're missing that personal connection. And I've seen more and more Airbnbs that are more co-living spaces where, you know, you rent a room inside of a house and you have like housemates, right? And I thought that would be a big turnoff for people because people want their space, you know, and people want their privacy. But in fact, I think it's the opposite. People are looking for connection, especially when you're in a new city, when you show up and you don't know anyone. A co-living space is the perfect place to have instant friends, right? And that's what I've found. You know, when I showed up in the Canary Islands, I'd never been there before. There was 3 other people in the house with me. And I was like, we're all besties. There's someone who has my back. If I don't show up tomorrow morning, they're going to say, where's Austin, right? So that can be good from the security side. But even from, you know, how young people like myself are what they're looking for is more than, you know, buying a house in the suburbs with a cat and a dog and, you know, driving a nice car. Like they're really looking for that experience part. And a co-living space really delivers, or a good co-living space, I should say, really delivers above and beyond just what an apartment or a house could, right? You're able to deliver, you know, services. So whether that's weekly cleaning or whether it's, you know, meals or what have you, you're able to deliver on the community aspect where they are able to connect with other people who want the same things that they want or share a lot of the same values that they have. And then on top of that, you're able to live in really expensive city, urban cities at a really affordable rate. And that's, I think that's really what we're able to deliver. I mean, when I was staying at a co-living space in Tokyo, I was staying in one of the best neighborhoods in Tokyo, like amazing location for dramatically less expensive than what I could probably have found on my own. Did I have to share a lot of the amenities? Absolutely. But I also made a ton of new friends. I cooked Thanksgiving dinner for 40 people in Tokyo, and I would have never done that at a hotel, right? So there's those types of really cool experiences that people are able to afford. So I definitely see this as the future of really where travel and you know, work is going.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love it. And it just made me smile because, like, even just this weekend, and we work a lot at our house, like, all of us worked crazy hours. So, like, this weekend, we made it a point. We went bowling together on Friday night. It was so much fun. And then salsa dancing on Saturday. And you, in the house, they were practicing in the living room. They're salsa dancing. And then they went out, and it was just like, again, you're right. It's built-in friends. You know, it's like, and they're lifelong friends. Because then sometimes the old alumni come back, right? So they're in the weekend, and then they'll come out with us, and it's like you pick up right where you left off. Yeah, I love it. And there's plenty. I mean, everybody has their own room. There's, you know, in ours, it's private. Right. That's your privacy. Right. That's always the number one question.
Right. Well, and on top of that, too, it's not like you're locking into a rent or a lease with roommates for a year, right? Like, if you don't like the people that are in your co-living space, you can leave, right? That's also the benefit of the flexibility, right? Yeah. Or if you find that your schedule just doesn't match with other people in the co-living space, you can leave and go somewhere else. And that flexibility is really great, because if you showed up in a new city, locked into a really long-term lease, and then you found that your roommates were crazy partiers at 1 a.m. in the morning, and you had to work early in the morning, you know, that's not going to work out. Whereas in a co-living space, you do have the flexibility. And there is that, I think there's more of a built-in understanding that, hey, we're professionals. We need to get work done. We're going to respect each other in a way that I haven't seen when I've just been like looking for roommates online.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that's some, when you said, you know, expectations meeting, what was that saying again? And I've heard
reality.
It. Yeah. And so it's, you know, sometimes we do a lot of posting of like, you know, salsa dancing and bowling. And we used to have huge parties at our, like 300 plus people at this one house. No, and it was nuts. But we would do those like once every other month, but we had so much content and video that we'd push out, and everybody would talk about the parties that everybody thought we were a party house. Well, then they'd come to our house or they'd move in and they're like, but we're super not partiers. Like during the week, we're all bed by 9 and we're working like crazy. So they're like, wait, like I thought this was party house. And we're like, no. That was like once every other month. And then the flip has happened too, where it's like, is all you do is you guys work and you don't have fun at all. You know, it's just like portraying that the correctly has been a challenge and a struggle of like, how do we portray that, you know, correctly on Instagram? And so the world can see like, we're working hard and playing hard, but not, you know, but then just in clearly define like, okay, just so you know, Monday through Friday, it's like, you know, 9 p.m. quiet after 9, and everybody's respectful of that. And everybody knows now. But yeah, I mean, one person moved in and she was like, oh my God, you guys work like animals. And we were like, yeah, we thought everybody knew that, but maybe not. I mean, we're definitely serious. It's not like we're not hanging out and goofing around. Like we're really working.
Right.
And with this, we just had the news at Kindred Quarters in Los Angeles. They did a segment yesterday and she concluded it by saying to me, she's like, wow, like, so is co-living like all about putting a bunch of workaholics together and living together? And I'm like, no. Again, like Kindred, like that's, I mean, we're all entrepreneurs and we're business owners. And that's like kind of our theme is, you know, working together. We all own our own businesses. We help each other with their businesses. We mastermind. We do work a lot. That's my house. But I go, please do not make this story about like co-living is workaholics and there's no life. no work-life balance. She was really stressing that on the questions to all my housemates. So it's going to be, I'm curious to see how this is going to get edited. Like, oh my
God. Yeah.
Like the caption, like when there's no such thing as work-life balance. I'm just like, oh no, this like, yeah, it'll be, I didn't want, cause again, this reflects on co-living in general. And I
like
want
the industry,
the industry in general. So I said, I don't want people to see if that's their first exposure to what is co-living all about. You know, it's not people working like 14-hour days and all this. It's so anyways, that was fun. That was last night. we will find that out next week when it airs.
Yeah.
Well, perfect, Austin. Thank you again so much. Again, this was really nice to kind of switch it up a little bit. Hopefully everybody, and I'm sure they did, they took notes, you know, when you're giving these strategies of, you know, best practices, when you guys are, you know, tackling social media. I mean, there's so much to do. We know that. I'd also add trying to be consistent. Right. So, I've seen some homes where they post a bunch of stuff and then they go MIA for 3 weeks because they're full. Right. And then what happens is they get a vacancy, but they haven't posted for 3 weeks. So they're filling that funnel back up for potential guests or residents. Definitely consistency. And I know it's a lot of work. I know everybody has tons on their plate. Obviously you guys, Austin's contact information will be on here so you guys can reach out. You know, again, it's great. He freelances. So if it's just you bring him in for strategy, I'm sure he's, you know, has that as an offering to help you guys out if you guys are like totally lost on this stuff, because it is a lot. So thank you again, Austin. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye.